The Anything Arty Show, every Thursday from 8 till 9 on Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. That's the Anything Arty Show, sponsored by the Artist Goldsmith Studio Connections on Iroha. Call in to see Christine's latest designs or phone 372 7809 to discuss a commission.
Yes, welcome along to another Anything Arty Show here on Waiheke Community Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. We've got two offerings for you tonight. We have a conversation with a newer resident to the island, Eve Bonn, and the conversation was about her passion for art and how it's influenced her life, really. It was one of those fabulous conversations that just kept going because it was a really interesting conversation. So we'll be hearing that in a moment. The other offering we have this week is the third of our installments of I'm Here, I Think, Where Are You, which is the letters from Timothy West, an actor that will be well known to some of you, if not many of you. And it was his writings. It's an insight, which is what I really like about it, of the life of a travelling actor. So it was letters he wrote to his wife, Prunella Scales, over a number of years, whilst he was travelling to various acting assignments inside UK and around the world. So it's just a really nice, beautifully written. His narration of them is fantastic. Lots of things were happening last weekend, of course. The big festival for us was the Book Festival. That was on this weekend coming up, the big event really for the island. I think it is the biggest one for us this weekend. It's going to be the Jesse Dean Trust, and that's the Garden Safari that's on 12 and 13 November. So the tickets are on sale, and you can get those from SeaLink at Half Moon Bay or online at www.sealink.co.nz. On the island here, you'll get them from Take Note. In Oniroa, Fuller's at Matiatia, you'll get them at Waiheke Marketplace and at Waiheke Eyesight. And of course, you can also get them online at www.waihekenz.com. So that's coming up 12:13, goes from 10 to 4. It's always a very busy time on the island with that. And it's just a marvellous opportunity to get to see some beautiful gardens. I'm not sure what makes a beautiful garden. I guess it's what people have done with their gardens. And again, that's, you know, just hugely creative. There's design elements, there's colour elements, there's form elements. There's just a whole load of things that come out. Things. That's a technical art term. Things that come out when you go for a wander. I think the two-day passes now will be $30, so $15 a day to get around and just see some amazing gardens and meet some really interesting people as well along the way. So there's lots of interesting things. There's live music often around the place. There'll be artists in different gardens, so it's just a really interesting day out. There's wines and olive oils, gourmet treats around the place. You never quite know what little surprises and goodies you're going to stumble across when you go from garden to garden. So that's this weekend. And of course, if you're not going on the garden safari, just be aware that often there's an influx of motor vehicles. People bring them across to get them around as well. There may well be likely to be some more buses around as well, so just be a wee bit extra careful on the roads over the weekend too. And some heads up about the Waiheke Santa Parade, which is coming up on Saturday 3rd of December. So that's going to be going from 3 to 4 in the afternoon on Saturday the 3rd. And this year, we are really excited at the station because we are actually going to be in the parade. Yay! So thanks to Thomas for getting us organised, getting us kind of focused to get in there this year. We're going to have here's my street cred going down here. We're going to have a hip and groovy float, man, which we're excited about as well. So we look forward to being part of this great community event, Saturday 3rd December, 3 to 4, the Waiheke Santa Parade. Now, The conversation with Eve Bond, as I was mentioning before, it was one of those wonderful conversations that just kept going and going and going, because it was just really interesting. So I caught up with Eve earlier last week, and we were just having a conversation about her passion with art, where it had come from and how it influenced her life. So sit back and enjoy the conversation. When we met, your man was on the radio on the with the Darby and Joan on the Friday night.
He was.
Talking about all things motor vehicles, I think it was, from memory. Drifting and things like that. And when you and I caught up for a conversation afterwards, I suddenly found that you not a hidden artist, but you've got this real passion for art.
I love art. Creative, anything on any field.
So where did it all come from?
I think about that a lot, and I was told by my aunts and my mum I always had a pen and paper in my hand from the time I could pick one up, a pencil.
Yeah.
And I've just been drawing. Probably I wasn't so talkative when I was younger. I've made up for that, my husband will tell you.
So should I put a timer on this conversation?
Yes, you should.
It's only an hour long show.
But drawing, sketching has been a part of my life always. I've got two wonderful sons, Cohen and Quaid, and bringing them up, I was able to extend that teaching to them. They're great artists, the two of them. And if I'm not with pen and paper, I now take to watercolours and oil, acrylic. I pretty much like anything creative, like sculpturing. I've done glass work.
Wow.
I feel like even cooking is you know, creating.
Yes.
When you've got your hands in there and you're making things. So it's various areas of life.
So it's just part of you?
Yeah, it is. It's been building layers as time permits. You know, I've been, like most people, a working mum and a homemaker. But in everything in life, there's parts I can create.
Right.
So in my working life, I can extend myself to create billboards for work projects. Of course, graphic art has now taken over a lot of freestyle.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to say I'm not so savvy with that side of life yet. I'm not sure if I want to be. I'm definitely more a freestyler.
Yeah.
Whereas my husband, who is the stunt driver, he's all about measurement. He's all about lines, and everything is measured exact. Whereas I'm a cook that throws everything in, and I'm an artist that just dabs, and there's no recipe. If you ask me how I did something, I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly.
Right. Nice.
Yeah.
So where do you exhibit? Have you exhibited? Have you put what you do on public display?
I have exhibited to private workplaces, some cafes in Wellington. I have them. I'm probably a shy artist.
Right.
I prefer to have audience that I can trust. Because with art, there's always critiques.
Right.
And you need that. You do need to have some type of what I would call encouragement. But I'm probably a little bit sensitive.
Well, there's encouragement and encouragement. Well, keep going or give up, I suppose, isn't it?
Well, that's right. I'm probably, it occurs to me sometimes I don't really give a hoot what people think.
Right.
So, but I do underneath. If I hear something, I mean, it's like cooking. If you've made something really nice and people go, this is delicious. Well, it's like art. It's all subjective, but if someone says, wow, that's cool, I want to hear that, but I'm not sure I'm going to, so I'm a bit vulnerable.
Right.
I won't put it out there. Having said that, I'm building up my confidence, like most artists. Little by little, I hope to have work on display, and especially on an island like this, I think I feel safe to do that.
So why do you get that sense that it might be safe in this environment? Because it's not the first time I've heard artists or people who have got a flair for some sort of artistic outlet in whatever it is, say that they feel more comfortable in an environment like this than they have in other environments. I'm just curious as to if there's anything that...
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel that because I've been able to mix with artists, writers, musicians on this island over the last 8 years, and because there's such an eclectic collection, there's room for all different styles.
Okay.
I don't feel like there's... I'm still new, but the reality is there's so much different types that I feel like you can put yours out there.
Right.
Whereas if you go to some places like... when I was in LA, the type of artwork there is very commercial. And so if you're... you're going against the grain, you're more likely to get criticism that you're not following the trend, you know?
Right, okay.
So that kind of safety, I suppose. I think that the people make me feel safe. They're very welcoming, they're very extending, they want to teach, they want to learn on Waiheke. So I don't think that's a false security. I think that's something that you instinctively feel. And time will tell.
Yeah. So if you take the Los Angeles experience for a moment, and this will be a generalisation of what I'm asking, but is there more a... when you said people here are more likely to say, oh, great, another artist, come in, you know, have a conversation, have a chat,
right,
what are you up to here, try this, try that, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Is it more likely in a Los Angeles environment where you won't have that immediate support, if they're more likely to be seen as a rival, and oh gosh, not another one, that's the last thing we
need. Exactly,
it's
more competitive there. Whereas I don't, that's possibly what makes it a difference here, is I don't feel people are competing here, they're contributing. They obviously would like to make a living and be acknowledged. Whereas in LA, like many other things in LA, it's a very fast paced, I personally did not feel safe all the time.
Right.
But I'm sure there are places, you know, it's a generalisation.
Yeah.
But it's competitive, and everything is about the dollar. And I don't feel that on this island. I feel it's about quality. The artist's work is acknowledged, and people will talk to me about an artist. They will actually sell me an artist's work.
Right.
Whereas there, I felt you had to go find the artist.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
About 2 years ago. It's a different place too. You know, I walked into a gallery and they said, are you a collector or buyer? And I remember thinking, well, I like both, but I'll say I'm a buyer.
Wow.
And she acknowledged me. That was great. But the person who came behind me said they were a collector, and they got champagne and strawberries.
Wow.
And taken to a back room.
Wow.
So after I learned
that... So they identify by price, according to the label, is that right?
So I became a collector for all the next galleries. I couldn't believe that. It was stunning
to
me.
Isn't that incredible? Right. So hence back to what you were saying before about the commercial side of it.
I believe so.
So it is very much the dollar driving it.
Yeah.
Which makes it quite
a different
dynamic. I mean,
they've got fantastic artists there, but...
Sure.
And also, I did notice a lot of it was computer-generated... You know, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm not knocking it. I don't know enough about it to knock it yet. But it was a different experience, and people make you feel safe. And this environment I see here is, you've got singers on the street. Austin Markets promote all the artists, writers. Mark Somerset, the writer, and his book. I looked through that and went, this is wonderful. You can be putting out your idea on an island and exporting it.
Yeah.
What a wonderful way to make a living.
And I think that is one of the amazing things I don't know if it's amazing, but one of the unique things, one of the nice things for this community, and I'm sure it will be in other communities, but we have people doing whatever it is they're doing.
Right.
And they are world leaders at what they're doing.
Exactly.
But you never really get to know that. And because it's not...
It's low-key.
Because that's not the important thing. The important thing is that these people are doing what they're doing, and you have a conversation with them, because you either find that you've got something to talk about or you haven't, rather
it's
than,
wonderful.
Oh, I should talk to this person because they're an international figure on
they're
whatever.
Understated.
Mm.
They're understated. But once you discover that, it's like discovering a jewel, you know, and there's lots of them on this island. It's quite incredible.
Yeah.
I just met... Liz from Tivoli, the bookstore.
Yeah.
I saw that Robin Kahukiwa's exhibition was on. Fantastic. Amazing. I walked in and I think there's about 10 exhibits, and just blew me away.
Stunning, yeah.
I'm going to go back in.
Because it's something like over a 40-year period or a 30-year period, I think,
1971,
that work, is it?
1971, one of her first works. And I've followed Robin Kakiwa's works from my sister Geneva, who introduced me. She's in the art field as well, running her own gallery. And she bought me a book of Robin's, and I've always been hooked. And I've followed her progression. It's a wee bit like watching artists as they are going from a baby kitten and growing through the cat stage, and now they're the, you know, the lion, lioness. It's kind of wonderful.
Yeah,
it blew me away.
And Liz is another great example of somebody doing what she's passionate about with her books.
Yes.
And great space at Tivoli's, and putting the art wall in has just been fantastic. I mean, it's just such a nice... And it's a bold thing to do, given everybody's doom and despondency about books. They're dying, you know, they're going to disappear.
I know, it's
and
shocking.
To have a dedicated bookshop, which is... And the quality of books in there is just... stunning, absolutely
excellent.
Stunning.
Yeah, I agree with you. She's got a beautiful... I encourage everyone to go to Tivoli. I've been here only a few months, still discovering places, but that's got to be one of my favourite little niches.
Yeah, it is. It's just a lovely spot. It really is. Now, you were saying before that you've sort of been in contact with people sort of from the island over about 8 years, I think it was. But you've been away, and
in Wellington.
You been away and come back again? Or, you
know, yeah,
sorry,
definitely.
If you've been away, you would have come back again.
Yeah, definitely.
Sorry, let me try and put that another way.
I wanted to stay the whole time. It wasn't possible. Yes, we've lived in Wellington 17 years, travelled to South Africa, America. My husband's in the movie industry as well as stunt driving.
Right.
So when he gets opportunities to go to movie sets, occasionally I can go. And our son, who's a BMX trainer, Quade, he trains in United States of America for about 3 months of the year. So we've all, as a family, been able to go with each other and support each other.
Right.
And the boys are great at supporting me in my art. Anything I want to do in the artistic world, they are always supportive. And my husband's amazing. He built my own art studio. And it's all about helping each other find what is your adrenaline rush, really.
Right.
People look at art and probably go, oh, you know, that's so boring. But when I see a piece of canvas, a blank canvas, I just get so excited. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's I look at a canvas and go, wow, what can I create on that? And, you know, sometimes I have some what I call inferior quality work. It wasn't my vision what
right.
I produce.
Right.
But for most of it, I can't believe what I can produce.
Yeah.
It's quite incredible. Yeah. I draft, and then it takes on its own life.
Well, I guess, not being an artist, I don't know this to be true, but I would imagine that if you do create something and you look at it and you go, nah, you know what, that's not it.
Right.
You can just either wipe it out or break it up if it happens, you know, whatever you probably don't do that, but many a time I did, else you just look at it in angst for the next 4 years.
Oh, no, no.
I guess you can just erase it and start again. Or is that too simplistic?
I think as a young person I did that quite a lot. Especially if you're entering competitions and you want to nail it, you want to get it right. The vision you had in your head is what you're now seeing. And then I realised I was being impatient and the quality of work was not what I wanted, but other people would say it is fantastic. And my mother would often scroll my ripped or pages and put it in between books and keep them for later in my life. So I hope I've grown up enough to know that sometimes your work is not what you thought it should be, but other people may appreciate it.
Isn't that interesting?
Waiheke Radio, your local radio station.
Not hang on to, but remember to ask you. One is around, as you were travelling in different places around the world, I often hear people who travel with their husbands, wives, partners, whatever way, if they're not the one who's going off to do the work,
right,
then I often hear conversations about, yeah, it was a lovely place, but after 4 weeks I could have come home because there wasn't a lot to do. I wasn't legally, I couldn't work or whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
For you, was it different in that you could basically because you
totally.
Do art, then it, potentially that isn't an issue.
It's absolutely not an issue. People say when you get bored, and I've always said give me 5 minutes of boredom, but having a family and two growing sons, they've kept me well and truly active. And my artwork is something I have a pen and pad next to my bed, for ideas. I won't be drawing during the night, not that I know of.
Automatic drawing.
But ideas. Ideas are things I do a lot of ideas in my head of what I'm thinking of. And in, when I've gone on location with Eric, especially the last trip to Johannesburg, definitely all the movie crew people sitting around, the directors and all the editors would say, gosh, don't you get bored waiting for Eric for, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours a day? And I go, no, I'm sitting here, and I show them my sketch pads, and they go, wow, that's incredible that you can actually be absorbed in something.
Yeah.
You know,
because potentially the people on set would get more bored than you, because
they're
hanging about waiting for the next whatever they have to do, and it can be incredibly boring.
I think I've inspired people. That's been something I've really liked about art. It's like a language. I met some wonderful people, Warwick and Sue, about 4 years ago when Wellington was having absolute rubbish schedules with the train systems.
Oh, okay.
And we have become fantastic friends. And Warwick hadn't painted for over 20 years, and we had an art session at our home in Wellington, and he is an amazing artist, and it was all there, and he's got it back now, thank goodness.
Wow.
But to see him, and he's been really grateful that I was able to motivate him, and it's the same with my niece Maya, another niece Hazel, that it's a language that you talk. You can sit together and be doing freestyle art. Helping each other. If they feel safe, they'll ask you, what do you think I should add here, or should I take something away? And so, yeah, it's a growing, and that's what I think it is on the island, is I don't think people are competing, they're just trying to help each other extend.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a lovely way of putting it.
Yeah.
I was just thinking you could do a fabulous family and friends show. Wouldn't that be lovely? You
have
exhibits from your family and your friends, and you just bring them together and put them on a wall, which is great. Because you're so right. I mean, we have spaces here from obviously the community gallery.
It's
a fixed space, and places like Toy Gallery, Red Shed, dedicated spaces. And then you have places like Tivoli, which has got a space that you can use. And it's like the Upcycle, which again...
Oh, yes, I haven't been in, but...
Artworks, you pop in, because, again, apart from the phenomenal stuff that they've got in there, just great, great craft
that
they do in there. But they've also, again, got a little space in there that artists can exhibit. Yep,
wow.
And maybe, and I'm not sure of my timing, but it might have been within the past 6 months that they've really done a bit more focus on that.
Okay.
And they've had openings and things, and it's just been a beautiful little space. But again, it's almost like you're in to look at something else, and suddenly you're kind of and it's not out of place, because what they do with their craft work is art anyway, but then suddenly there is this space where there's an exhibition.
That's brilliant.
And you think, well, that's really neat. Yeah. So you're almost it draws people in into something that they may not normally go. So you come to the art gallery, you go, why would I go there? But when I'm somewhere else, and I guess that's why cafes and some artists like to have their work in cafes, because it opens up a possibility to people who they may not see them.
It's a subtle way of educating and letting the eye of the observer take something in without being really forced.
Yeah.
A lot of people who are not necessarily into the art world are normally surprised how much they really are, you know, in terms of, say, music or... like our sons would say to me about classical music, that's so old and boring. And I'd say to them, well, yeah, I probably thought that when I was about 17, 16. But I said, actually, that music's in quite a lot of the ads that you like and songs that you like. They've actually taken and adopted. It's not new.
Yeah.
So the boys started listening a lot harder. They never realised, because it's like you're absorbing something without really knowing what it is.
Yes. Yeah.
And art is very much the same. There's beautiful pieces that are used for so many different types of campaigns that
amazing.
Do you know who's actually painted that?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I love being taught. When people say to me, do you know whose that is, or... but yeah, exhibitions, galleries, I travel. When we go anywhere, I I'm always heading to bookstores, galleries. The boys usually ditch me and go to all their man things, and we hook up later. But yeah.
So when you're when you're travelling and you're in other countries, does that automatically influence what you think about creatively, what you might draw, what you might sketch? Do you kind of deliberately
totally.
Go, oh no, I can't sketch that because I'm in this country, or is it just an influence that happens?
I think every place, including New Zealand, I mean, just sitting here with you outside on this beautiful vista, and we've got the bay there, I have never seen anything that I did not think I could not interpret.
Right.
In it may be the different form that I might be interpreting it. So watercolour, for me, I'm still learning.
Okay.
So for me, watercolour is actually, I'm challenged.
Right.
To get that to be exactly what I want. But I'm enjoying that challenge. That's right. What's exciting. Yeah. Places like South Africa, I can seriously say, no wonder people make movies there. The colours are amazing. They are so vibrant. The sand and the dirt, but actually it reminded me a lot of Australia. We lived in Australia for 10 years, not in Ayers Rock sort of zone, but when you go into the outback, the colours are amazing, jump out at you. And in New York, I was probably more fascinated with the architecture, which took me in a whole different part of the art.
Okay.
The Guggenheim, the MoMA, they're wonderful galleries and museums of form,
right?
Which you know, I'm probably more the artist, vibrant, bold colours, but I can tone it down when it comes to watercolours or different subject matter. But architecture and jewellery, I was inspired in New York, which was a nice surprise to myself.
Right. Yeah.
You know, rather than buying it.
Yeah. Lenny and Artie Show.
I was actually interested in looking at it. And I noticed Waiheke's got a wonderful architectural tour.
Yes, that was a really interesting thing that the Toy Gallery are doing at the moment.
Right.
And in fact, that the tour of the houses is on this weekend. And I don't know if it's unique to this weekend. But so if
not,
you can only do it, I'm not sure. But
I'm going.
But I just loved the whole idea, which was the architects could put their drawings and models in the gallery to look. But then you could hop on the bus
and
actually
go
and see, and then get an appreciation of how that translates to reality. That yes, you could consider this again as being like a piece of art on a hillside or wherever it is.
It's fantastic, and I'm impressed with all the different genres that Waiheke is organising. And to be truthful, I can't keep up with them all. You know, I wish I'd had more time, but there's so much happening, which is wonderful to think that, you know, hopefully this is a annual type of turnover. They do this regular, because then I won't feel so upset that I can't get to them.
I think that's... you're so right. I mean, there's everything. There's from bronze work to wood, art to ceramics. It was an amazing ceramic artist on the island. To all the paint styles you mentioned, the sort of chalks and pastels, and you name it. The fabrics, we get some amazing fabric artists on the island, and
there's poets,
people working in formats of, I'm not sure, stuff.
Genres,
that I would never even have thought about before.
Exactly.
Well, of course, but
flex,
that constitutes.
I saw a lovely
classic example. Yeah, flex.
Lovely lot of work. What was her name? Up at Elstein Markets, and she does her flex designs, and they're like corus, and then they're quite intricate to get them more quite and very detailed work. But that's something I'd like to learn, is flex making, flex weaving. And I hear you've actually got someone on the island that's quite...
We do, for flax.
Yes.
Sorry, I leapt in there. Yes, we do. And in fact, I've seen, if it's the same person I'm thinking of, whose name is not in my mind, so I can't tell you who it is, but I've seen... there's often advertisements for flax weaving courses.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure they're done through the...
Piritahi.
I'm pretty sure they're done through Piritahi Marae.
Okay. All right.
But certainly, from what I've heard and understand of the people who take that particular program, they are, you know.
I've heard
excellent.
It's fantastic.
So, I mean,
I wanted to do it in Wellington.
But it's done with all the. I think what's lovely about that style of learning or form learning is you get the a cultural aspect
that's
as well.
Right.
There's something more than just here's a paint pot, here's a
that's
paint
right.
brush, this yep. is how you paint this.
The
there's
technique.
Actually a language. You mentioned it before, there's a whole language
yeah.
that goes with that. There's a history, you're doing something significant,
carrying on
I guess.
Carrying on a tradition
yeah.
too.
So it's and a
hands
heritage.
On.
So it's something, yeah. So
yeah,
be
I'm looking forward to that. This weaving and the flax making itself, this, I don't know if, like in New Zealand, I just think of flax making in terms of bags.
Right.
So my limited mind only allows me to think that this is all you can make from these beautiful, you know, greenery. But the reality is you can make so much more, cloaks, just headgear, ornamentation. Baskets obviously is traditional, so yeah, I want to learn. And also there's a part of me that wants to be a little bit more breaking out of the mold, you know, whatever the medium is, to find a newness about it. So it would be like almost saying you know, we know what we can make with a piece of flax, but did you ever think you could make this?
Right.
And it's always about that. What's something else that would really take people's imaginations and make them go, wow?
Yeah.
Because there's always something new around the corner, things that we haven't discovered yet or haven't designed yet.
And I think that's a lovely thing when people can see that. You know, people like yourself can see whatever that is at some point and go, do you know what? That could be done with this medium, and you suddenly go, gosh, I would never have put those two things together. That's just phenomenal.
I think the Wearable Art Awards showcase that.
And we have our Junk Defunct event on the island too, which is I guess our version of the wearable. But just phenomenal. I remember on one occasion, it might have been last year, the year before, we had a dress made out of Hovis bag, not Hovis, that's me, back in the UK, Vogels bags.
Oh, Vogels.
Sorry, there are other types of bread as well, just to be fair, so it seems like we don't advertise in the station. But yeah, so it was made out of Vogels bags. It was just magnificent.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you've got Rose McLeod, just down in Artworks. She's has done or is in the process of doing a dress out of pages of a book, which is just, so somebody brought her in this book and said, can you use this to make a garment? And that was kind of like, well, leave it with me and we'll see what comes up. So you have these amazing,
that's exactly what I mean.
When I walked in, I thought, we'd never have thought of that. That's
exactly.
amazing. You know, you don't really think of Vogel's bags as being a dress, but there you go. And there was another one. Oh, there was one done recently, which was a out of tissue paper, toilet paper.
Yep.
So it was this incredible, almost like bouffant dress.
How fantastic.
Made out of, it was just absolutely stunning. Now that is just, you know, superb.
That's right. That's pushing your imagination out. And I mean, we want to be sustainable, and recycling is the big thing.
Yeah.
And you can do it easily. There's quite a lot of artists that actually do that. That is how they make their living.
Yes.
His name fails me at the moment, but in Auckland, one of the galleries there, he makes his artworks out of recycled everything. He welds a little bit of this and that together, and then he's got a bike out of all this stuff.
Brilliant.
So yeah, I want to be heading that way. The future for me is networking, contributing on the island, building up our name as a family, and because there's so many beautiful people on the island, obviously I feel like I can help, and vice versa. And children. The children, I did a bit of work in State College, Pennsylvania in USA, and I was an art director for about 300 children aged between 8 and 21, so older children. And that included things like teaching them to do tie-dyeing, clay work, bead work. We made Maori poise.
Wow.
There. We did this sort of shortcutty way. We didn't quite do it the long version. More like pom-poms, cut them, and then add your sort of twined string. But the kids were amazing. They're so absorbent. They're also so incredibly advanced. The boys amaze me, the skateboarders. So the genre I was looking after were gymnastics, skateboarders and BMXers. And very active kids. Yeah. They're very hugely active. So when there was rainy days and art was on the schedule, it wasn't sort of ringing the bells, but I did actually, apparently I had the most skateboarders ever return to my workshop because of the freedom for them to explore, tie-dyeing. Yeah. They'd never done tie-dyeing. Yeah. So they were bringing in every bit of clothing they all had, and there was tie-dyeing all around the camp.
Much to their parents' delight, no, I'm sure.
Well, actually, one boy bought a whole brand new pair of white jeans. I went, you are not tie-dyeing them, they're brand new. Take them away.
That's right. That's okay, he said, they're not mine. They're my sisters, I know I do it for. Oh, superb.
Yeah, so children, I absolutely love watching, teaching, and with our sons, I've tried to steer them so that, you know, you can express through art, and they are very, very fantastic. They do a lot more cartoon action figures, but they're certainly very good at their designs. And you see a part of that person come out when they're putting it down on paper. Yeah. Yeah. Something quite fascinating, an extension of themselves.
It's lovely. So we may see you as part of the school holiday.
I would love to. I've been
team
looking
somewhere at one of the galleries. Yeah,
that'd be great. Exactly. Yeah. And to help with school programs, and I do recognise the island gets inundated with children during the school holidays.
Yep.
So I spoke to a grandma actually up at Austin Markets with her grandson, and the poor little tyke, it was his first day of holidays, he looked so bored.
Already, day one.
I said to him, are you having a great holiday? And he went, no. And grandmother said, oh, there's not much for him. He's a 10-year-old, there's not much for him to do. Yeah. His friends have all moved off the island. And so it did actually sort of stimulate me about, there's something there.
Yeah. You know,
I'm not meant to hear that for just to forget it.
Right.
So, yeah. And because males, I've had two sons, so they do require a different level of, for me, instruction.
Yeah.
Males opposed to young females.
Yeah.
There's probably more encouragement needed for young males. Perhaps, I wouldn't like to generalise, but perhaps there's a, you know, maybe it's too effeminate to paint and draw, but then we can do other things like clay work. Or I did find the boys actually liked things that they use their hands in a bit more of a masculine way. You
gotcha.
Know,
build
banging
something.
Nails.
Yeah, but right. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But there's some amazing male artists, obviously.
Sure.
I'd love to be part of helping them all grow.
Fabulous.
In the islands, too.
So, Eve, can people get in touch with you about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
How do they get hold of you?
They can contact me on, if I give an email address.
Yep.
It's at Everick, Everick007 at gmail.com, or contact yourself, Dougal.
Yeah, yeah, get hold of the station. Yeah.
And I'm absolutely open to assisting. I'm looking at it myself, going out and checking out what's there and what's needed. But yeah, I feel very excited that it's a building time for me, and I'm hoping to bring what I have been experienced and share it, and also glean off the wonderful talents of this amazing island. I've never been to a place like Waiheke ever, and I'm so glad it's part of New Zealand.
Lovely. Yeah. Isn't that fantastic? Yeah. Eve, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Dougal.
I know you've got all sorts of other things on, so really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And look forward to having you back on the show at some point in the future.
Excellent.
Brilliant.
Cheers.
Thanks a lot.
The Anything Arty Show, every Thursday from 8 till 9 on Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. That's the Anything Arty Show, sponsored by the Artist Goldsmith, Studio Connections on Iroa. Call in to see Christine's latest designs or phone 372 7809 to discuss a commission.
Yes, you're listening to the Anything Artist Show here on Waiheke Community Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. Thanks again to David and Christine, the Artist Goldsmith, for sponsoring the show and looking after us. Always appreciated. And you can always check out some of Christine's amazing work at Studio Connections in Ocean View Road. So we started the show with a conversation with Eve Bourne about her passion for art and the influence that that has had on her. And we're coming up to I'm Here, I Think, Where Are You? Which is our third installment, I think that's maybe the right way of putting it, of a series of letters that actor Timothy West had written to his wife Prunella Scales over a period of time whilst he was travelling as an actor around the world. So we'll hear from Timothy West and then we'll have one more offering before we go.
In 1975, I played Judge Breck in Trevor Nunn's RSC production of Hedda Gabler, with Glenda Jackson as the eponymous manuscript burner. We went on a world tour. Princess Theatre, Melbourne, February 1975. Arrived this morning drunk with jet lag and exhausted from our 24-hour stopover in Singapore. Well, rent an ambiance. Instant Oriental experience. Scarcely have you apologised for tripping over a limbless beggar on the pavement when your attention is caught by an elegant lady in a samphu with a parasol and a dainty basket bargaining for star fruit. And then along comes a rickshaw, its passenger a 120-year-old Indian in pristine white robes, his beard reaching to his knees. Laundry hangs in festoons from poles overhead. Most people seem to be children. Some of them really do come up and say, "You want to meet my sister, she plenty good jig-jig." The shops are wonderful, dark behind green canvas flaps, the owners sitting on the ground, spinning, measuring meal, buying gold. The harbour crammed cheek by jowl with every kind of boat. British warships, Arab dhows, Chinese junks, Malayan tramp steamers, fishing boats, luxury yachts. Men looking like Peter Lorre, giving terse commands to accomplices and then roaring off in motor launches, threading their way miraculously under the bows of the shipping. Raffles Hotel, rather forlorn now. Didn't stay to eat there. Instead had a wonderful piecemeal picnic from the various mobile hot food stalls that move into the central car park at dusk. And took a trishaw at midnight to Bugis Street, the established venue for open-air drag parties. The first person I met, in male attire, was one of the Elstree cameramen. He told me that just a moment ago he had come upon the editor of a popular British weekly magazine and indicated a table at which were sitting three ladies whom I might have taken to be Maxine Audley, Vittoria de Los Angeles, and Barbara Cartland. I don't know which one of them was the editor, but it does show you're not safe with your little secret even in Singapore. And now it's lovely to be back in Australia. The hotel is called the Chateau Commodore, and it tries valiantly to live up to the dual responsibilities of its name. Norman baronial and 18th-century maritime are an unusual combination of styles, and polished binnacles and schooners in glass cases do not happily complement the claymores, targes, and stags' heads in the residence lounge, any more than the false open stone fireplace in the front hall looks quite right between two brass portholes. The bedrooms have opted out of the contest and are sort of Hendon neo-Jacobean. Edward VII is going out here currently on Channel 7 and under its original title instead of, as in the USA, Edward the King, as opposed to Edward the Quantity Surveyor or Edward the Chiropodist. The Americans originally wanted to call it the Royal Victorians till I pointed out that the King was more by way of being a Royal Edwardian. I suggested Bert and Vicky and Ted and Alex, but they didn't go for it. Anyway, here it's apparently scoring 28 points against the Ernie Sigley show, which I'm told is very satisfactory. I was on a chat show for Channel 7 the other night, hosted by a lady who was grounded 2 years ago for bad language and is back now but very nervous. Doesn't listen to a word anyone says and keeps looking at the monitor, plucks continuously at her armpit saying how hot the studio is. The show lasts about 3 hours, and the audience are given beer and the racing to watch on another channel in case they get bored, which they do very early on. I talked for about 18 seconds, then there was 25 minutes of sports footage, after which I had another quick burst. There were a lot of commercials and then a pop group, and finally a serious man with bare knees and a whistle hung round his neck came on and spoke about fire risks in the Dandenongs. They only had me because they couldn't get Glenda. Someone must have warned her. Elizabethan Theatre, Newtown, Sydney, 1st of March, 1975. The Sydney scene is rather fierce with the late nights, but the extraordinary thing is you never feel tired here. People are being smashing to us, and all the friends from last time send their love to you and the boys. This is a big Edwardian, not Elizabethan, theatre, a little way out of the centre of the city. Do you remember we came here to see the last performance of the Australian ballet season? Cinderella, with Robert Helpman and Frederick Ashton giving their ugly sisters for the very last time. The place is to be demolished soon, apparently, and they've taken up all the carpets. It's like a huge tropical railway station to play in, and you have to yell above the noise of the trains and the street traffic and the fidgeting of people stuck to their seats in the intolerable heat. There's no air conditioning, so they leave the lantern in the roof open, and those huge flying black beetles come in and swoop down onto the stage. They have a particular fondness for Glenda's wig and want to nest in it. She's wonderful, never bats an eyelid, but the effect is a bit Charles Adams. I met Kate Fitzpatrick again, who has fallen heavily for Trevor Nunn, and at a party the other night kept sitting in front of him, looking uncharacteristically soulful. I asked her what she thought she was doing, and she said she was playing it Jewish and darkly intellectual, but she didn't appear to me to be getting anywhere. She is incidentally brilliant in Ride Across Lake Constance at the Nimrod's very good new premises. Hugh Hunt's Peer Gynt at the Opera House, worthy and old-fashioned, but masterly compared with the Melbourne Theatre Company's Double Dealer, under an English director who had clearly decided that no one in the audience would understand the words, and therefore had introduced so much fan-tapping, handkerchief-waving, tinkling laughter and skipping about that, of course, nobody did. Quotes of the week. 1. Will you be bringing a man or a gentleman? John Tasker, with a hangover, asking me to dinner. 2. Just put me anywhere at all. 2 in the 6th or 7th row stalls on the aisle will be just dandy. Betty Davis asking Glenda for seats for the first night, which has been booked out since January. 3. Final recognition of Adelaide-born Keith Michelle's talents as UK's top actor-manager came with his appointment last year as director of the Chester Festival. His production of Ibsen's A Month in the Country was the great success of the English theatrical season. TV Week. Royal Hawaiian Hotel, Honolulu, April 1975. Well, while you're in Nottingham, I'm sitting under the stars on Waikiki Beach, sipping an exotic drink in the torchlight and talking romantically to Connie Chapman about Douglas Morris and the kind of salaries he pays at the Bristol Old Vic. We have a 2-day break here because in crossing the date line from west to east we get 2 Sundays in a row. Very pleasant, but it would be nice to get out of Honolulu and see more Polynesians and fewer fat American ladies with those triangular white beaks on their noses. Our 2 sons, Sam and Joe, in the care of their half-sister Juliet, came out to join me in the United States for 2 weeks in California and 2 in Washington, D.C. Huntington Hartford Theatre, Hollywood, California, April 1975. The first thing to hit us here was the Oscar ceremonies. You probably read about the furore. During the presentations, Bob Hope and Frank Sinatra made an announcement purporting to come from the board of the Academy, castigating one of the winners for improper conduct. The award in question was for a documentary on Vietnam, and during his acceptance speech, the director had read out a telegram from a Viet Cong general corroborating the facts shown in the film and expressing his approval. Maybe it was pretty tactless, but the point is that Hope and Sinatra had cooked up the reprimand between them and delivered it as though coming from the Academy Board, whom they hadn't even approached. Most people here don't seem to think that mattered, though. Hollywood, as a district, is very odd. Of course, it's quite away from Los Angeles itself, and until you get out in the other direction to the gracious homes of Beverly Hills, all you have are a few streets of sleazy massage parlours, cheap tourist shops, and a Howard Johnson's. Hollywood and Vine is just an intersection of 2 such dismal thoroughfares. Anything that happened here happened a long time ago, and the brass stars let into the sidewalk to commemorate the great feel like they're tombstones. The first night party was attended by Greer Garson, Valentina Cortese, George Siegel, Francis Ford Coppola, and James Stewart. Not that they spoke to anyone except Glenda. But I met a terribly nice couple who, blow me, invited our kids off to Disneyland tomorrow. I can't go as we have a rehearsal, and asked me to join them for supper after the show. They have a boy about Sam's age, and could not possibly have been more welcoming. Hedda is a huge hit. I got Juliet in by graft the other night, and just as she'd gone inside, I was offered $100 by a man for a seat. Too late to call her back, give him the ticket, let her see the show in Washington on a $20 standby and make 80 on the deal. Damn. Sheraton Hotel, Washington, D.C., May 1975. I fear I should now give you a detailed account of how we lost Joe. Both the boys were very sleepy on the flight, and Juliet was suffering with tonsillitis. We arrived here at Dulles Airport, with me keeping an eye on Sam and Juliet on Joe, who suddenly got very lively and asked me for money to go and buy some sweets. The company's bus then arrived, and I called Joe, and we all got on the bus. I thought. Juliet lay on the back seat with a rug over herself, and, I supposed, Joe. So it wasn't until we reached the Sheraton, 20 miles away, that his absence was discovered. I found the hotel manager's wife, who burst into tears at the news, and together we rang airport security, the Pan Am desk, the duty manager, everyone we could think of, without eliciting any news of Joe's whereabouts, and finally she offered to drive me back to the airport. She was in a terrible state, and kept taking her hands off the wheel to find her tissues. "Oh, that poor little boy," she kept sobbing, the car weaving across the freeway as she blew her nose. "It's all right," I told her. "He's only six, but a sensible lad. He'll find someone and say he's lost. And mind that truck!" When we got there, I sat her down with a large bourbon and went off in search of my son. I asked first at the sweet stall, and they led me straight to him. Finding himself apparently abandoned, he'd gone back to the stall, mentioned he was lost, and they'd called the airport police. The police had taken him down to their office, and by the time I caught up with him, he'd learned the form of arrest, how to use the phone intercom, and how to handcuff the sergeant to the radiator. He was, in short, having a wonderful time, and was very sorry to leave. Throughout the drama, I was composing in my mind the phone call I'd have to make to you. "Yes, the show's going splendidly. Houses have been wonderful. Fine, yes, we're fine. Patrick's fine. Peter Eyre's fine. Sends his love. Weather's good. Hotel's very nice. Yes. Darling, what I'm really ringing about, you know, we used to have two sons." Royal York Hotel, Toronto, May 1975. I don't know how our management have done this, but somehow this hotel not only has no record of our advance booking, but even now, after they've found us rooms and we've checked in, they refuse to acknowledge our existence. They can't find our names in the register, won't take messages, and decline to give us our keys. Want to come home now. Been very nice, but enough now. It's terribly cold, and Toronto is full of people in tartan dinner jackets ordering malted milk. Went to Niagara-on-the-Lake yesterday. Weybridge, really. But goodish production of Pygmalion, with lovely Beth Shepherd. Great to see her again. I have been half in love with easeful Beth. Very good two gents at Stratford, Ontario. Robin Phillips had lunch with him, and we tossed and gored several persons. Went to Montreal, which I loved. After all these weeks of modern streets and concrete office buildings, to see a cobbled square and a genuine 18th-century portico actually brought tears to my eyes. The Royal Alexandra is a fine theatre. We are part of a subscription season, which means we appear on the list of attractions simply as May the 5th to 24th, Glenda Jackson. I'm going to New York for a few days when we finish, and home on the 29th.
Ah, that's wonderful stuff. You've been listening to the Anything Artist Show here on Waiheke Community Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. So we have our final offering for the evening coming up, which is Leonard Rossiter reading author Barry Poulton's view on button badges. We've heard Leonard narrating a couple of Barry's pieces before, and this is another stunning little piece of his. You can hear the show again on Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock, or you can check it out at www.waihikiradio.org.nz on the show page for the listen again, and there'll also be a podcast up there within a couple of days that you can download and listen to at your leisure. Thanks very much for tuning in once again, and till next week, bye now.
There was a time, once, when the burning issues of the day were the subject of passionate, well-argued articles in learned journals. Even the subclauses had their innermost recesses examined for flaws of logic. Scholarly pamphlets were sold by the yard. But nowadays, the key question in any political or philosophical movement is, can we get it on a badge? Can a complex and highly detailed argument be reduced to not more than three words? And in a pretty colour. The Darwinian debate would depend today on whether the slogan, apes rule, OK, was a winner or not. In the beginning, when badges began, there was a rule of thumb that any issue simple enough to be reduced to a badge was trivial enough to be ignored. Alas, now it seems any issue too complicated to be reduced to a badge should be regarded as intractable and ignored. Any philosophical concept without snappy marketing potential clearly needs restructuring. And we seem to be moving towards the two-badge, or even three-badge society. People are wearing their brains on their sleeves. The youth of today no longer gather in pubs to exchange views, but stand there in silence to read each other's badges. Not that there aren't arguments any more. I know people who have been punched for wearing the wrong badge. But increasingly people don't speak of having read a good book, but of having seen a good badge. And whereas bores used just to tell you their unfunny old jokes, they now stand in front of you and expect you to read them for yourself. Again and again and again. It is ironical in the supposed age of mass communication that as the information available grows larger, and so the doses it is dispensed in grow smaller. Children's size. Rock against this. Say no to that. Save it. For as the microchip has replaced much of the need for unnecessary labour, so the microthought has replaced much of the need for necessary brain power. Instead of explaining their views, people get them out of clothes cupboards. And a new point of view is no longer the result of careful thought, but a change of jacket. Admittedly, the original populist appeal of the badge was that it could enable the grassroots to express their opinions on important matters without their needing to know the faintest thing about them. But it's gone too far. Increasingly, the decision whether to be for or against fascism or abortion depends largely on which side has the nicest graphics. And where is the badge for someone who is for abortion on some grounds but not on others? Or is in favour of a slight cut in public spending? It's rough being a nonconformist in the modern badge society. And when there is no longer any room on badges for people's entire Weltanschauung, it spreads over onto their T-shirts. In a society more conscious of sexism, the only occasion one is allowed to stare at breasts is when a slogan is printed across them. Apparently, political exhibitionism is acceptable, though it's arguable how effective a socially aware T-shirt can be. Is one more likely to remember to save the whale because the message is punctuated with a nipple? In a way, it's almost an invasion of privacy, for one could always avoid people with offensive views, but now one may have to sit next to a T-shirt you violently disagree with. Perhaps you would rather not know your neighbour is proud to be gay. I may disagree with what you say, but should I defend to the death your right to wear it? And when it's not T-shirts or badges, it's posters. Admittedly, in the privacy of one's home, consenting adults can have the posters of their choice, but somehow even old-fashioned wallpaper has an aesthetic edge over exhortations to boycott chili and oranges. Undeniably, some posters can be an art form, but the need to live surrounded by your own opinions and values printed all over the walls is a perverse form of narcissism. And domestic bliss can't come easily when in the lounge you must think of the armed struggle in Namibia, in the kitchen you must maintain your solidarity with the vegetarian movement, in the bedroom you mustn't forget the martyrs of Grunwick, and even in the toilet you're not safe from the dangers of American imperialism. Home life for the slogan society is habitat furniture and hair shirt decor. Posters, T-shirts, badges. They're all part of the same impoverished quality of thought. Opinion should be cut to fit the individual. Mass-produced attitudes are like second-hand clothes. Badges are substitutes for thought, and all too often their wearers cannot expound beyond their two or three words. Opinions used to depend on years of study. Now they depend on an outlay of 20 pence. But these chic accessories have a great power, not unlike subliminal advertising. That was banned because you could find yourself buying things without knowing why. But if every 30 yards you walk past the same thought, you may find yourself thinking things without knowing why. No need to win over hearts and minds, just lapels. If badge power is here to stay, and if the great issues like the nuclear debate are to be swayed by such propaganda, let us all fervently hope we are not incinerated for the simple reason that the slogan, nuclear power, no thanks, wasn't quite catchy enough.